Turning the topic to international institutions that we created to benefit the U.S. order or the Western order. So we created institutions like the United Nations, the IMF, the World Bank, NATO, just to pick four. Those institutions may or may not be working for U.S. interests. What Alex mentioned earlier was that it's going to be very difficult to create new institutions immediately, but the current institutions may not be working for us. And so maybe I'll ask the question to John Eikenberry. We created these institutions. To what extent do you think that they're still working for us in our objectives? If, for example, how does NATO interrelate with containing China? Or how does the United Nations help us pursue our world-like goals? There you go. John.
Yeah, well, that's a good point. I do think we are undermining ourselves, and Trump is really leading the charge here in retracting America's position in these global institutions, because it's inviting China in to rewrite those institutions to tilt them away from liberal democratic values, and they're doing that across the boards in lots of different ways. So we aren't in the fight, so to speak, and I think that's deeply harmful to use a. I have most of my colleagues on the phone are realists, so who talk about the national interest. That's very non-responsive to the American national interest. So it's hard for me to believe that that's going to that the U.S. doesn't come back to thinking in terms of what's its long-term interest. How can it preserve its power? How can it legitimate itself? How can it create more a world where it has more friends rather than fewer friends? And if that kind of pragmatic, self-interested, enlightened kind of pursuit of American interests has any sway, there will be, and there even is today, despite Trump, a kind of understanding across the political spectrum that NATO, the United Nations, the various global institutions serve American interests. They serve it in helping to legitimate America's role. It helps create a demand for American leadership rather than countries wanting to escape the U.S. And the fact that we now have a global competitor, the China, we should be, it's kind of competitive hegemony. Who can do better for us? Who can solve problems? Who has ideas for mutual gain that we can tie ourselves to? China or the United States? So if we were serious about competing against China, we would be doing more liberal international order building. And I do think that's coming back because Trump is an anomaly. We've elected somebody who's put the entire force of the American government, the most powerful government in the world, domestically and internationally, at odds with that order. So this is inside the tent trying to destroy it. And it seems to me that that's not normal, that's not helpful. It doesn't serve very many people's interests, and that at some point that will be seen as, whoa, what were we thinking? We've damaged ourselves. That's my narrative.
Larry, this is John Mearsheimer. Could I just say a word or two here?
Go.
It's very important to emphasize that Donald Trump ran explicitly against the liberal international order. He said that the United States was going to get out of the business of spreading democracies. He said he was against an open international economy, and you know he loves tariffs. And the man has never seen an institution that he doesn't loathe. And he made that clear when he ran for president. Very important to understand, he was elected. He is in the White House. Now, he was not elected mainly because of foreign policy, but in good part because of foreign policy. All of this is to say the liberal international order had failed the American people. That's why he got elected. So when John Eikenberry tells you all these wonderful things about the liberal international order, it's important to understand that the American people didn't agree with John Eikenberry, and that's why they elected Donald Trump.
Larry, and John, I think it's not that the liberal order failed the American people. It failed some of the American people. Most of the American people
did
vote for Donald Trump. But the fact is that most people did pretty well. But some people did really badly. They did worse than their parents. They lost their jobs. They don't know how they can get their kids educated. They don't have any money. They're alienated from the present society. Those are the people I supported Trump. So it isn't that Trump was elected because the liberal order had failed all Americans, but it clearly had failed a large part of the United States.
I agree.
Well, Larry,
I agree with that. The WHO did not fail the American people. NATO did not fail the American people. The United Nations has not failed the American people. The Paris Climate Accord did not fail the American people. I mean, the American economy is rigged against most of the people on the lower spectrum, and that was partly because the global economic order produced outcomes that were radically unequal, and that is where I think a lot of the reputational disdain for liberal international order came from. But a lot of that, as we know, is technology and things that have to be fixed, but it's not global architecture of multilateral cooperation. That's not. We need more WHO today. We need a more pragmatic trade agreement so that the people who voted for Trump aren't necessarily winning with Trump's promise to bring it all down. Farmers in Iowa?
They're not winning materially. That I think is clear. And we all recognize that. But it's kind of, if you ask the obvious question, which is why were these people who are in lower income levels supporting Trump when Trump seems to be doing things against them? Well, one answer is that they're stupid. The other answer is that they feel deeply alienated from the present political system, whether it's run by Democrats or run by Republicans. For 40 years, I've seen the real incomes decline, and I think that's a real problem, and I don't know how to fix it.
Yeah.
Darren, did you want to make
it? Yes, I wanted to make one point. I guess a lot of this conversation goes on as if there is a single liberal international order, but there are many possible details of an international system based on global institutions. For example, when you think about economic globalization, how much it protects capital versus labor, what types of technology transfer it engenders, what types of actions towards climate change or tax havens it facilitates. And that heterogeneity among the types of globalization and international order may be as important for some of the questions that we are asking. And some of that is ideological, some of it is because of the political power of certain types of capital owners or certain political parties. But I think it may be useful to distinguish the problems of the specific types of globalization and international order that we have cultivated, and B, the future possibilities for alternatives that may or may not work better for developing countries. Again, if it's a particular type of international order that gives more power to American businesses and facilitates tax havens, etc., that might be less attractive for certain developing nations and more attractive to others. So I think those are questions that perhaps we should also bring into the conversation.